Hello, welcome to Mod Midwives, a Metro Midwifery podcast. I'm Gina Gerbaugh.
And I'm Nedra Hale, and we are home birth midwives serving the Denver metro area.
So today we are going to talk about a somewhat uncomfortable topic, and it is precipitated by a challenging birth that we had over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Or that I had over the weekend. I shouldn't try to, you know, share responsibility too much. but we're going to talk about what happens when midwives make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And I think that I would have really appreciated hearing this conversation as a new midwife or as a student, because mm-hmm. It never really occurred to me that I wouldn't be perfect all the time as a practitioner. And so right. That was a really hard reality to face, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. we are just people. They call it practice for a reason. You know, we don't know everything all the time. You learn more as you go. Sometimes things are not easily discernible, uh-huh. and we will sometimes make mistakes.
Absolutely. And this client you're talking about, I saw her the week before, right? Like, so mm-hmm. if this was in fact missed, then I probably missed it too. So
well, and not only did we miss it, she was a late transfer from the birth center. So it's mm-hmm. possible, you know, maybe we should back up. This birth we discovered that the baby was breech in the middle of labor. We didn't go into labor with the knowledge or suspicion that the baby was breech. Mm-hmm. Occasionally babies can turn in labor, and it's possible that that's what happened. But most of the time breeches are missed in the prenatal visits. Mm-hmm. But for a variety of reasons, I think it's still inconclusive. But so for whatever reason, if this was a missed breech or a baby that turned late, it almost doesn't even matter. Because the outcome is still the same, and that is that when something is discovered that is not optimal, we have the same responsibility to act on it. And I feel like I kind of said this to the family during their postpartum yesterday. I said, you know, I don't want to try to convince you that the baby flipped in labor, because I don't know. I have my suspicions that it could have been that way, but I don't want it to be a thing where I'm trying to like control the narrative of it, because it may or may not have happened that way. We don't know, and we will never know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And right. we are limited by our hands. You know, we are good at palpating baby's position and assessing where we are and what's going on. But it's not diagnostic. Right. And when you go and have an evaluation by the physician at the hospital, they do not rely on their hands. They have tools at their disposal, higher tech tools at their disposal. And they're mm-hmm. not ruling a breech in or out by their hands. They're doing an ultrasound, which we don't have access to.
Right. Right. So in this case, you know, based on your report, I think it is really possible that the baby turned in labor, which I don't usually think that. I usually am like, yeah, right. You know, we just missed it. You know, I've missed a couple of them in my career, and you have how many? Like one?
This is the third breach that I've discovered in labor. Now, uh-huh. I believe the first one possibly flipped early, and the doctor said as much because of the position of the baby. The second mm-hmm. one, which was in the fall about 2 years ago, I absolutely missed that breach the whole time. That was a definite mistake on my end. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it because of the way that the legs were bracing the head. And so it was very difficult.
That's what happens, is that those frank breaches, the feet brace the head, and then it makes it very difficult to tell.
And the bottom was so far into the pelvis.
Right.
That you couldn't really identify. It just felt like a really low head.
Right. Right. Yeah. So that definitely confuses things.
I feel like it's very clear to say I have one, obviously one that mm-hmm. I've missed. And mm-hmm. then this one and that first one are questionable. They're mm-hmm. threes. So, but three in 12 years.
Right,
11
right. So it just happens. Like stuff like this happens, and it's I mean, we're not like running around with ultrasounds, most of us in our practices. It's just we're not allowed to do ultrasound in our practices here. So it's and you know, so what I always tell people is that we're really, really good at palpating. We're better at palpating than people who have ultrasounds because this is what we have, right?
what we rely on. Yeah.
What we rely on. And but it's obviously not X-ray vision.
And to some degree, it's academic because other things came up during the labor, other signs that this baby was either breach or there was a problem. We would have been transferring whether or not I had identified the breach. So one thing that's very common in a breech birth is to have a lot of meconium, not because the baby's in distress, but because their little belly is getting squeezed and their butt is right there at the intrepidus, and so they're, continuing to pass meconium. There was a ton of meconium in this labor, so we would have gone for that. The other thing is that the baby's heart rate was quite fast, pretty rapid, which is not usual and often a sign of infection. Although there were no other signs of infection, I still would have needed to take her in for evaluation to rule out an infection. So two other things would have got us to the hospital, even if I hadn't discovered the baby's breech. But I did figure it out with some uncertainty because it wasn't a very straightforward presentation. But with knowledge that whatever was happening in there wasn't normal. So whether it was breech or a shoulder or some unusual thing, it certainly wasn't a head at that point. I wasn't sure. So, but I am nothing if not a self-flagellator. So I have been, beating myself up about it every day, all day, wondering if I could have missed anything. Like you said, you had hands on her belly. I had hands on her belly. Our student had hands on her belly. The birth center that she transferred from had hands on her belly after 36 weeks. There were lots of midwives who helped
Yeah.
baby's position.
Yeah, and I never questioned it. Like, I mean, as you know, I am often saying, okay, Gina, I want you to, when you see this client, please double check the position, so that we can both have a confirmation that this is a Vertex baby or not, because sometimes I'm like, is that a butt or a head, and so it's nice to have two people. I never had that feeling with her. I was just like, that's a head, so.
But we have missed them, and that's the point, and doctors miss it. And the doctor.
I famously sent, do you remember the story that I not only did I miss a breech,
Oh, that's
after multiple intuition moments that I also missed, which we'll talk about that in a minute too. I had two people going at once, and so I sent one of our colleagues as a backup to this birth, and the baby was breech, and then she had to deal with all the stuff that comes with that. Like it is not ideal, and you're looking at a transfer, and which is not what anybody wants to do, and it's just so anyway, super embarrassing. And now it's a good story because, like, what kind of a person sends their backup midwife to a breech birth? Well, it's me. It's
oh, that I do remember that because I was at the other birth with you.
Yes.
Getting updates about the that was a long time ago. How long ago was that? Probably 10 years ago or 9 years
Yeah,
ago.
probably. Yeah, close. Yeah.
Wow. Well, another mistake, a really, really, I think this is one of the most frustrating mistakes that almost every midwife I know has made this mistake. This is a mistake that is just sooner or later, almost everybody will make it. I don't know if anybody hasn't. Have you ever heard of a midwife who's never heard of this happening?
I don't think
I
so.
don't think so
And
either.
I mean, there's a lot of midwives that don't do cervical checks, so
Like maybe they wouldn't know.
maybe they wouldn't know, but I also feel like those ones might be the ones that are most likely to do it, though, like if they rarely do cervical checks. So, yeah, so that's a question mark.
So I had a client, first time birthing person. She was very fit, very thin, very strong pelvic floor core. I don't know exactly why that's relevant here, other than and maybe it is relevant. When she was in labor, she was very much acting like she was in very active labor. Maybe even transition, working real hard with these contractions. So I offered a cervical check. I usually do. I probably didn't for a while in that case because it seemed like she was so active. But usually I will. Of course, that was before any of these breech situations. So that was before I really liked to confirm presentation. But that's one reason why I like to do, if they're amenable to it, I like to do a cervical exam when we get there so that I can kind of assess baby's position. Anyway, when I checked her, I just felt a hard round head presenting. And what can happen with some people is that lower uterine segment, the bottom of the uterus, can be kind of like really tight around the baby's head. And you don't feel squishy tissue. And I kind of wonder if being really fit means you have less fat, even
I
internally.
don't know.
I don't know, but it all felt really tight and hard. And it felt like a head. And I told her she was complete. I told her she was fully dilated. She was acting like she was fully dilated. I only felt a round head in her pelvis. That's all I felt. And something that can happen is that, especially with first-time birthing people, the cervix can completely efface. It can efface to 100% paper thin. So there's no length to the cervix at all, but it can be closed. And so she had a paper thin cervix that was closed, meaning she was 0 centimeters dilated. And I told her she was 10 centimeters dilated. And I finally figured it out because she wasn't feeling pushy, but was struggling for hours. And I said, let's just see what happens when you push. I'm going to feel what happens when you push with a contraction. So I used my fingers to feel what was going on with the baby's head. And when she pushed, her cervix came forward and I could.
Because it was like way behind the head when you
Nope.
were
Oh,
checking.
yeah. So the baby was really low in the pelvis and the cervix was extremely posterior. And when she pushed, the cervix came forward. It made her uterus like straighten out. And I, boy, that is just the worst news to deliver. And she's
It
probably
is.
been at it like 8 hours. This is probably like 8 hours into
Wow.
labor.
Wow, it's so awful.
It was the most painful mistake I'd ever made. And this was also probably 8 years ago. I wasn't a brand new midwife. I had several years experience, but it was the most firm, effaced posterior cervix I'd ever felt.
That's a hard one. It's hard to I'm trying to remember the last time that happened to me, but what I try to remember now is that if I don't feel a lip of cervix, because you like almost always feel a lip of cervix, like almost
If they're
always, not
almost
always.
complete, yeah.
They're all, yeah. So, I mean, like, not always, always. Sometimes you get in there and they really are totally complete, but it's just really unusual to not have something in the front. And so, if I don't feel anything in the front, I just really go searching and make sure. Or if there's not like hair or something, you know, like I just like go
We're
searching.
very
But
clear, like if they're ruptured membranes, you can sometimes really feel fontanelles and sutures and stuff like that.
So sometimes it's super obvious, but even in that case,
You can
I
feel
would
through.
say we should be really looking anyway, even if you feel fontanelles, because sometimes it's so thin that you could feel the fontanelles through it for sure. And so It is, but sometimes it's like way back there. And so it's like you have to like have the patience to like really look for it. And even then, maybe you won't feel it.
They're struggling often at this time,
Right.
not comfortable. And I have really short hands or fingers, and
Yeah.
so I have to just, boy, really go in deep, and it's really hard. It's not
Right.
comfortable.
Very uncomfortable for them. And so them having the patience for that kind of exam and the midwife having the patience for the exam. And it's still possible that you won't be successful if you can't reach back that far. Like it can be far. And so yeah, that's a tough one. And it's yeah, I think everybody's done it. I
And
hear it in peer review a lot.
interestingly about this, the mom was a therapist and the dad was not well in touch with his emotions. And they were really, really mad. Really mad. And what happened was we labored for a while after I discovered it, and she was struggling too much, and she ultimately decided she wanted pain relief, and they blamed the discouraging news. They blamed me for the discouraging news that made her unable to cope with labor. So we ended up transferring to the hospital. He basically asked me not to come with them.
No.
I made the transfer, and then he basically said, "You can go ahead and go home." He wasn't didn't act mad in the moment, but he was. And she ended up having a C-section, and I wasn't able to support them in labor at all. And I think that they blame the fact that she had a C-section on me, and as I am totally willing to own that I made a mistake, and that must have been really discouraging to have that change of plan or change of what
Yeah.
you thought you were. But we are not powerful enough to make somebody have a C-section. I mean,
Right.
we can make such big errors that we can end up in a C-section because we didn't manage the labor well. That is a thing. This was not in that situation. This was not that situation.
Right.
She
She was
just.
having a difficult, like she got a difficult labor dealt to her.
Yes. And the baby
Yeah.
was clearly a deep posterior, with deep posterior presentation, well in the probably plus two station by the time we went in, at like 0 to 1 centimeter. So that's just a hard baby to rotate around.
Right, which is why the cervix was probably way back there like that. Like it was a malposition situation.
But I didn't cause it, and it was interesting. She did want to have some resolution about it, and I think in the end she felt okay, but he was extremely unhappy. And I think unhappy clients is one of the hardest things to deal with.
It is like it's so upsetting and hurtful. And the very first one I remember was when I was a student, and it was somebody that we had worked with before, and we had like a great relationship with this person and her family. Like her mom always came in, and so so this was a second pregnancy with them, and we had a conflict because we needed to get some extra testing done because the baby wasn't growing well. And it turned into a thing, and the mom just turned on us, like said vicious stuff in the appointment. And I was a student again, and I was young, and I just like cried, like, which was really unprofessional, but it was like so shocking and mean. And I don't think I'd ever been treated like that before. Like it was like unbelievable. And I'm sure my preceptor wanted to murder me for crying. because it's really unprofessional, but
It's so hard.
it was awful. And of course, our relationship was destroyed with these people. And that, in my opinion, was absolutely not our fault at all. We were like trying to keep this baby safe, and and then we did go on to having a baby with growth restriction, and all the reasons we wanted to do this, but it was terrible. And then of course through the years there have been the occasional clients that are unhappy, and that's just a part of quote unquote doing business, you're going to have people that are unhappy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's going to be your fault, and sometimes it's not going to be your fault. Like, it's going to be a misinterpretation of something that was said, or an affect, or a, you know, personality thing or something, right. You know.
I feel like when I started off as a new midwife, I don't want to say sold midwifery differently, but mm-hmm. I talked it up a lot. What am I trying to say? Like, I would say home birth is so great because you have so much autonomy and decision making, and it's so peaceful, and it's so wonderful, and flowers and rainbows and butterflies. And it was a little zealous. And of course, with experience comes a reality check that some people get dealt a crappy labor.
Yeah.
And if you have that unfortunate coalescence of getting dealt a crappy labor with a vindictive, angry person who mm-hmm. either misreads you or misinterpreted what you were saying or doing, mm-hmm. and that other element of being an inexperienced midwife where you probably have blurred a boundary or lost objectivity about mm-hmm. the clinical case in front of you,
right.
It's a recipe for a really, really angry client.
Yeah.
I don't do that anymore. In fact, sometimes I think I overemphasize the, you know, here's,
oh yeah,
there's so many things that can happen. We're going to do our best. We're going to pay close attention, but this is not a guarantee. This is not a guarantee. We are not guaranteeing you that this labor is going to go the way that you
right. want. Yeah, I mean, that's what happened, at least that's with us and with me, you know, is that you just get more frank as you go through. Like, no, I can't guarantee that I'm going to be at your birth because I am a human being with lots of, you know, with my own life, my own stuff happens in my life. And so if I am unable to come to your birth, of course, there will be someone at your birth. Like, we'll figure that out, but it's, but yeah, we can't make promises. We're not going to promise that you're not going to get a transfer. We're not going to promise that your birth is going to be fabulous. You know, like, we can't control all of these variables. So all we can do is
powerful.
No. So we just do our best, but, Yeah, I mean, we had a client that was mad a while back that, you know, the stuff that they said, I was like, were we at the same place? Like, what is that? Like, that doesn't sound like me at all. Like, do you know me at all? Because that doesn't sound like me at all. Like, so it seems like really unfair in those kind of situations.
Right. Like, and sometimes it's
unjust.
It's an expectation misalignment. Like, I think that sometimes people think, and I think this is part of what I was getting to when I said I would kind of sell the virtues of home birth. Mm-hmm. I think somewhere in that gets translated as labor is going to be easy or easier, or you're not going to struggle because you have freedom of movement, or you're going to, you know, that's not right. necessarily true. Yes, you have coping skills available, but you also don't have medications. You also don't have, you know, we can go get medications, but it involves a transfer. Mm-hmm. And I think that sometimes there's a disconnect between thinking that something is natural means it's going to be easier. Right. And that,
right.
in fact, the opposite is sort of true to some degree. And so parents that are not prepared, that don't understand the process, that don't understand the anatomy and physiology of what's happening, that don't understand the limitations of our scope of practice, their risk factors for being, or they're mm-hmm. at risk of being unhappy.
Yeah.
And add that to the, you know, disastrous, just cultural nightmare right. of the internet.
I know. And if you get the wrong person angry at you, then you get eviscerated on the internet. It's so great.
We really put ourselves out there. We really put ourselves at risk, and we cannot defend ourselves. If somebody makes accusations about us, we can't share details because of HIPAA. That is where HIPAA is protecting people, is that we can't say, well, that's not what the clinical picture was.
Right, right. So it's like this horrible, powerless feeling.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't behoove you to defend yourself anyway.
No, I mean, humility is really important. And, you know, and I always just try to think, okay, if somebody was mad, then obviously something that I said or did came across how it wasn't intended, you know, and it's maybe, you know, my fault too, you know, like, it's just like, that is, I probably, I do internal dialogue a lot. So I was probably internal dialoguing and like, it didn't come across the way it was intended or whatnot, you know? So it's, I just try to have humility and try not to take it too personally, try to learn whatever there is to learn there. Particularly if it is that, you know, something like, you know, backing up to the, you know, the cervix hiding behind the head thing and we got it wrong, you know, check on that. You know, I mean, of course there's, you know, lots of places where we could do stuff better. So it's just, you know, at every birth, that's why we review them every time. Like, okay, why could have this, you know, maybe, you know, if we had known this meant this, then we would have done this, you know, or something, you know.
But I would challenge people to consider, you know, do they have the ability to recognize the humanity of the midwife and recognize the limitations of the midwife? And we just right. don't have the same, I don't want to say safety net in place, but if you're in the hospital, there's a whole staff of people mm-hmm. to give a second opinion or bounce ideas off of in that moment. That's why we take two people to a birth. But sometimes, mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we just don't have, it's not like a hospital. There's not the same kind of checks and balances as there are. So if you right. can't, if you can't see the midwife as a human who is fallible, it's probably not right. for you. If you need a system, if you need a robot,
yeah.
probably an OB would be a better provider. I'm not saying OBs are robots. They absolutely make mistakes too, but they mm-hmm. have systems in place to.
Yeah. So they have very little wiggle room, which, yeah. and we have a lot of wiggle room, which is actually not great a lot of the time. Like yeah. there's so much thinking that has to happen. And every situation presents differently.
Because we see people as individuals.
Right.
We take right. every single case mm-hmm. by case. We, yes. you know, we do need to have boundaries. We need to have protocols and limits.
Yes.
And I would argue that those boundaries get more clear and defined with more experience.
Oh, yes.
Or they, yes. they should.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the mistakes that we talked about earlier as we were planning this episode was the mistake of not listening to your intuition and respecting your own boundaries as a midwife.
Yeah.
That I think I would dare to say happens to every single midwife when they're starting out, you know, because they are trying to serve all the people and be a midwife to all the people in the way that you think, like we're going to help these people achieve their birth. And, you know, and as time goes by, you just realize, you know, this isn't our responsibility to make all of this stuff happen. Like, we are there to provide a service and to do our best to keep everybody safe, you know, within the, you know, limitations of our capabilities, you know. And so yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of pressure. But you and I both went to a birth early on in our relationship where I was backing up a different midwife. And that gets a little weird sometimes because other midwives might be comfortable with something that you're not comfortable with. This is one of those situations. And we went and they didn't know us. They didn't trust us. They had, you know, a weird situation going on that we wanted to transfer for. And they were refusing to transfer. And it was just incredibly uncomfortable. I had to call the president of our association to see what my responsibility here was. And we ended up doing this birth that we weren't comfortable doing it. Everybody was fine, but it was not good because we were pushed out of our comfort zone, like against our will. And so we were basically
really lucky that everything turned out okay.
Yeah,
in that
situation. Yeah, we were faced with, we were faced with like abandoning these people or doing a thing where you call the paramedics and then leave. Or, you know, she was also delivering. So it was like, okay, I guess we'll, you know, follow through. And it turned out okay. But boy, I did not enjoy that experience. I think not respecting our own boundaries was a mistake, even though everything was good, you know, and that kind of thing. There's lots of times when clients especially are trying to push you out of your comfort zone. Don't let it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. We're still thinking about it. 11
right.
years.
Right. Right. 11. So obviously, as my therapist says, there's like those little traumas that happen all the time. Well, that's one of them.
Yeah, definitely. It was not a good situation. And I think it's so important to stick with your boundaries. And, you know, even if you end up in an okay situation, maybe clinically you know, it was okay. And, you know, maybe you didn't break any official rules, but you felt like you were bending
right.
your clinical judgment. You could still end up with an unhappy client.
Yes.
Because you weren't true to your vision and your scope and your right. comfort level. It's not worth that kind of stress so much.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of practicing with integrity is drawing those lines and just sticking to them. And people still might be upset about it, as in the, you know, the first story I was talking about with the upset clients. I mean, that was, we were definitely drawing our line and they were really mad about it, you know, so it's not like they're always going to be happy about it, but I think that most people would respect it, you know, that it's like,
yeah.
And yeah, this is clear communication.
Felt like there have been times when I have said, I have let myself be influenced by the client's wishes, even though it was crossing a comfort zone for me, crossing a line of comfort. And in the end, having the client say, you know, it's not what I would have, that wouldn't have been how I would have liked it to go, but we hired you to make these tough calls. So yeah. We appreciate. So when you do stick with your boundaries, there will be usually be an appreciation. And remember, when they're interviewing early on, it's not about the rainbow and butterfly birth. It's actually what they're asking is what happens if there's a problem. So you need to follow through. What happens when there's a problem? You have
right,
to follow
right.
through what you say you're going to do.
Right, right.
And that is to not wait for red flags. And when you don't listen to those boundaries, you end up in red flag territory.
Right, right.
So it's tricky. It's very tricky. I've had very few, but boy, they all stand out for me when they're not happy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's just part of the territory. And boy, it was really hard to learn really early on. One of my very first clients on my own was really unhappy and particularly vindictive. And mm-hmm. it was such a painful lesson. It made me question everything. It made me question me. It made me question the profession. Yeah. And I realized where I really went wrong was not having boundaries and not putting some of that responsibility on the client to be prepared for labor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not, we can't do it for them. It's not our birth. It's not our birth story. And sometimes
yeah, exactly.
adults, a yucky labor.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Is there anything else to say about that?
I don't know. Just remember that you're human and you're going to make mistakes and just try to make them not really catastrophic ones.
Well, and one of our barometers is you need to be able to rationalize your decision-making or yes. justify your decision-making to somebody else. It might yes. be your midwifery partner. It might be to the receiving doctor at the hospital.
Right.
You need to be able to very clearly say, here's what happened. Here's why I did what I did. Oh, I do want to say this. Mm-hmm. There is a risk of getting invested in making a bad decision early on. So For example, in one of my cases where I would definitely say that I mismanaged labor, I had a very abnormal progress of labor. There was a very abnormal progress of labor. Is now that I have a lot of experience, it was just a classic posterior labor. And there wasn't good communication, and I didn't offer transport because, to me, in my mind as a new midwife, I was thinking, well, that could be really defeating to have somebody bring that up. But it is important to let people know that they're not trapped and that they have options. I didn't offer transport. We labored a long time. There was a cervical lip. I had her pushing. Her cervix got swollen. Because of the presentation of the baby, it sometimes felt some way, sometimes felt another way, but we kept pushing. And in the end, I kind of felt like I needed to stay home and keep pushing, hoping to get away from that decision not to offer transport earlier. And you know what? Those births just never all of the sudden resolve. They're just not going to all of a sudden resolve. You're going to transport in second stage instead of first stage, which is a much harder transport. And it was just, I don't know, I call it being invested in bad decision making. You kind of make a bad decision, continue to make bad decisions in order to rationalize the bad decisions that you already made. And then by the time you get to the hospital, you have like four or five bad decisions to justify. And it doesn't feel good. It does not feel good as the midwife.
I mean, sometimes a client, like I had one last year, sometimes we have a really hard birth, like in this one was a posterior one. And that client was offered transfer, so it wasn't exactly the same situation, but sometimes as long as it's their choice and there's not something dangerous going on, because you don't want to have to justify why you allowed something dangerous to go on at home. But sometimes it can be really hard, and yes, they can still do it and push through it and have this like triumphant birth, right? And that's what happened in this case. Like it was super hard. I don't know if I could have done it myself, but she did, and it was triumphant.
Well, and there's a difference between a difficult birth with progress and a totally dysfunctional labor without progress. And that's
So
the difference between those two.
learning to find that moment where you're like, birth shouldn't be this hard. Like this should not, you should not have to, the progress is, I mean, progress should be happening at all times, right? But just remembering that the bodies are, there is a way that the bodies get the babies out of them. And if it is not working in that way, we need to recognize it and not just like do every magic trick in the book to try to get this baby out, inappropriately. Like it's just sometimes it is dysfunctional and we're not in the right place to be at home.
And sometimes that, oh, and sorry, I keep thinking of extra things. And sometimes finding the sweet spot of transferring gives the client more options at the hospital. So you can transfer at a time when a vaginal birth is still on the table with an epidural and a little augmentation and rest. But if you wait too long, sometimes you have eliminated a vaginal birth as a reasonable goal, and C-section is the only reasonable option. So even if you have a baby who's totally fine, you can lose the sweet spot of. So I sometimes talk about this hierarchy, and of course, home birth is great, but that's like the cherry on top. Vaginal birth is really awesome, but a C-section is also a good outcome when we're talking about the safety of either the birthing person or the baby. So I have definitely changed my viewpoint of I used to think C-section was a bad outcome and we were trying to do all that we could to avoid it. And I just don't have that viewpoint at all anymore. Sometimes that's the way babies have to come out. Sorry, I talked over you.
No, it's okay. No, I just said sometimes it's the appropriate choice.
So yeah, there's definitely, you want to make sure that you can rationalize or I keep saying rationalize, justify your decision making. You don't want to rationalize bad decision making. You want to be able to justify what you did so that you can have, you know, have as many options as possible, even in a new location.
That's something we talk about a lot in our own peer review, is that if you're coming up against a decision that you are going to be uncomfortable revealing to your receiving provider when you transfer, or that you feel like you're going to have to fudge it a little bit or be embarrassed about it or anything like that, then it's probably not the right decision. You know, you do need to be able to stand up and say, I did this because, you know, whatever it is. So.
And the receiving providers, unless you've done something egregious, are general. I mean, this is not true for everywhere. I understand that home birth midwives are really up against brick walls in some locations. But in general, for us, if you can go in and defend, you know, here's what I did, here's what this looks like, here's the records, you can go in really above board. They respect you for that, and they appreciate you. And like, even in this birth this weekend with the missed or not missed breach, whatever the case may be, the attending doctor was like, so did you suspect the baby was breech? I was like, no, I would not have stopped. Not be here in this way if that's what I suspected. And she's like, yeah, it happens. Like, it's just, they give themselves leeway to make mistakes. We should understand that we're going to make mistakes, own them, and move on from them. Yeah. Don't get invested in them.
And don't be defensive and like all the stuff. Yeah. I mean, when we took that breach in a couple of years ago, almost now, it was the same thing. Like, yeah, sometimes I get missed. Like, it just was like no big deal at all.
So. You know, the first time I had the realization that doctors give themselves leeway for this was that I had a client who, it was her second baby. Her first birth was very uncomplicated, but then her water broke preterm, like 36 weeks, not very preterm. But we went to the hospital. I was there supporting her in labor, and the baby's heart rate ultimately crashed, just really went down, and she got rushed back for an emergency C-section. So she comes out of surgery, which means under general anesthesia. That's another thing. There's a lot of a lot of misconceptions about what an emergency section is, but what it really means is there's no time. You know, you have to have immediate anesthesia and get the baby out right away. So they come out of surgery. I'm in recovery. The baby has sutures on his arm. And the attending says, yep, I cut the baby because it was a rushed C-section. And that happens sometimes. So I've repaired it. Here's what to look for. Like, it was so matter of fact. And it was, honestly, it was one of the most liberating experiences in my mind, that we're not controlling. We make mistakes. We're not controlling what's happening. Sometimes things happen because of the difficult situation that we're presented with. And the way that she handled it was very revealing to me about how we should be handling mistakes.
That's great. That sounds really good.
Yeah. It was a light bulb moment for me.
Yeah. So,
all right. Well, I guess we keep saying we're done and then we're not done. So I hope this was a lot of food for thought for people. I'd love to see a conversation about this on social media. If anybody wants to comment with, you know, insights and tips that you have learned over the years for how to deal with, deal with these difficult situations. I think that there's a lot to be learned from each other in these kind of cases. Yep. So, all right. Have a good week. Follow us at Metro Midwifery. I'll put a post up so we can talk about it on Instagram if anybody's interested. All right. Talk to you next week or next time. Bye.
Yes, next time.
Bye.